I have to confess, I'm on my sabbatical, first time. I say that because there's 23 days left. Yes, I'm on my sabbatical. When I was asked to give a talk, because I'm on the sabbatical, I have a few things I could talk about, but I purposely chose this one because I thought the title was provocative and it's stuff you probably haven't heard anybody speak about. The math is going to be quite light. I wrote it sort of as an introductory talk, but there are some pretty pictures along the way that I hope you like. Oh. All right, so the talk is titled Fractal Tops and Color Stealing, neither of which you know, you don't know what either of them are. The picture on the screen here, it wants to step ahead on me. The picture on the screen is a picture rendered using fractal tops and color stealing, and you'll understand where it came from at the end. Besides being a picture, I'll leave it now, besides being a picture of the techniques that I'm going to describe, it also hints at one of the motivations. One of the motivations of this work is to take a real-looking object and color it in sort of a real-looking way. That's very loosey-goosey. Okay, here's an outline. We'll do a very quick review of the first three items, iterated function systems, the chaos game, code space, and then finally we'll define one of the things from the title, fractal tops. The work works with pictures, so we'll talk about mathematically how we can think about a picture and then link into this color stealing idea. There are some issues related to implementation, so we'll have a couple of slides talking about that, some examples, and then maybe what could have been more advanced discussion, but with the time constraint, I didn't want to embark on it, so I'll just hint at some things and likely do that along the way. Okay. Iterated function systems. I could not give a talk with fractals in the title without having this slide. I'm forced to. We have a complete metric, a compact set a compact set in the XY plane. In our applications, we're going to be working with pictures. We're going to be shrinking them to fit in the unit square just because I like the unit square. The standard elements of a fractal-based approach to things are the following. We have a collection of maps, n of them. I started indexing at 0 and went up to n minus 1 on purpose instead of 1 to n, wi's. Each of them is contractive in the usual Euclidean metric, say. When you take all the x's, all the W's, sorry, and lump them together with the space X and the metric, as mentioned, you get an n-map iterated function system. The idea, well, I don't want to jump ahead. Okay, fine. With our setup, then, you take the biggest of the contraction factors, and that's the contractivity factor of the whole system. Okay, good. A well-known result from John Hutchinson, a contractive IFS like we had, they're also referred to as hyperbolic IFSs, which is what I wrote in the abstract. A contractive IFS has a unique fixed point or set attractor, A, in the set of all non-empty compact subsets of X. That's an interesting set, the set of all non-empty compact subsets of X. Set attractor, yeah, it's a set. Every point in X is either in it or not. It's a set. If I take my W's, remember W's eat a point and spit out another point. If I take two points in X and feed them to W, a WI, they've moved closer together, contractive. If I define the related WI hats that eat a set and spit out a set, I can say that there is the A that's up above. The A is the unique set so that when you feed it to all of the WIs and do a union over all of those images, you get A back. And that's the standard fractal thing. A is composed of shrunken, because the WIs contract, and distorted, because they move things around, copies of itself. is likely the next sentence, because you can't give a fractal talk without having that sentence. Agreed? Okay. Well, suppose I want to draw a picture of this set. One thing that you can do is sort of exhaustively, you know, take a point or take a bunch of points, hit them with the W's one at a time, group all the points together. It's quite exhaustive. The nice, cute way to do things is to attach to each of the WIs a probability PI of its selection from the bag of maps. It's called the chaos game. Or the random algorithm, if you don't like to use the word chaos. The idea is quite straightforward. Take a seed point that's on the attractor so that every point thereafter will be on the attractor. Set the counter to 1. With the probabilities assigned to the maps, like reach into your bag, with probability P sigma I, you'll select W sigma I. Apply that to X0 to generate X1. Plot it. Repeat the whole process. When do you stop? When the picture doesn't seem to change very much, when the set doesn't seem to change very much. So there's a resolution issue that's underlying everything we talk about. When I am rendering a picture of this set, maybe black points are in the set, white points aren't, the resolution at which I'm rendering it might determine that I stop at a different time than if I were rendering it at a higher resolution. Based on the last talk, maybe I should mention that this IFS with probabilities naturally makes one think about, we've already mentioned A as the set attractor, it's just a set. You get the same set regardless of what the probabilities are and you know, the sort of trajectory of points that you follow. But if the probabilities are changed, then you'll visit some subsets of A more than others, because you'll pick that W more. And so you have a measure attractor that changes, and you see these pictures of histogram-like things, representing sort of the mass of visitation in certain regions. So, okay, so now we get to code space. Let's define 2 new things for our Nmap IFS. The code space. The code space will be the set of all semi-infinite strings consisting of the indexes of the map 0 to n minus 1. So symbolically, I'll write them as sigma, and sigma will be this string, sigma 1 all the way off to infinity. Each of those numbers, sigma I, is 0 through n minus 1. There's a neat connection here to the unit interval. If I stick a decimal in front of the sigma 1, sigma 2, and so on, put a 0 in front, and think of it as a base n number, the smallest that that string could be, thought of that way, this is the metric on the space, is 0. The biggest it could be is if every entry is n minus 1, which means it's 1, right? So whenever I see the unit interval, I now see fractal attractors and everything falling out of it, and it's a very wonderful world. You can embed all of this into the unit interval, is another way of saying that. Second thing to introduce, the address map, phi A. Well, the A should be a blackboard A. It's related to the attractor here. There it's correct at the bottom. Phi A eats one of these codes and then composes the maps in that way. It's a semi-infinite string, so, you know, it's an infinite or semi-infinite composition. It takes code space and gives you the corresponding point on the attractor. Okay. So, let's talk about the TOPS function. We can endow code space with a natural ordering, if you think about the base n notion that I mentioned. If you give me 2 codes, omega and sigma. Sigma is bigger than omega if the first entry is bigger, or if they're equal, keep going and checking until you find the first one where they're different, and the bigger guy's bigger. It's where they fall in 0, 1, right? If you're thinking about the chaos game with probabilities, the histograms that I sort of alluded to, as you visit, you just, you know, put a little bit of sand in that square as you're traveling around plotting your attractor. And every time you visit, you shove a little more sand and it piles up. You don't care about the ordering of the sand. Here what I'm saying is, when I visit there, oh, what's the code? Oh, maybe the code is bigger than previously. So you're sort of ordering the particles of sand now, right? By this ordering. Well, the pretty thing is, for any fixed x in the attractor, the inverse address map of x is a compact set, so it has a unique largest element. And that unique largest element is the thing that I'll define as the top. In other words, when I stacked up all the grains of sand, the highest one is the top corresponding to that point on the attractor. So for each x in the attractor, the maximum code that actually reaches that x is the top. Go back to the histogram. All these sand particles are piled up. I'm God looking down on it. What I see is the top. Agreed? And if I project the top into the plane, it's a picture of the attractor. All the stuff underneath is really not necessary. And that's the key, a key piece of the puzzle. So, what did I write? To every x and a, tau of a, the top function for the attractor a, assigns the largest IFS code that is addressed to x by phi. We can plot the points to obtain a visualization of the top function at the surface, and the projection into the xy plane is the attractor. So far, so good, right? Okay. Switch modes for a second, and just we're going to talk about pictures for a second. Pictures, the way I want to think about them, you know, a 512 by 512 square picture of something. Okay, I can rescale that to fit in the unit square. A pixel will now correspond to a certain little box depending on the size of the picture and so on. But for every XY in the box, I have an RGB triplet if it's a three-color picture or a full-color picture. That's one color model. I could pick others. The picture function P takes points x, y in the box and gives me a color. That's my picture function. For this is a continuous extension of a real picture, because a real picture, of course, is piecewise constant on some little box, right? Fine. So here's the big slide. Given a picture function, P1, that takes the box to color space, gives me some colors for every x, y. Given one IFS with n maps, V1 through VN, working on the box, with set attractor B, I'm going to call it the coloring IFS for reasons that become clear in a second. Given a second IFS, W1 to WN, that they're both n is important, they have the same code space, call that the drawing IFS with set attractor A, define the following animal, P2. It's another picture on the box, the unit square, to code space, and it's defined as follows. P1 composed with phi B composed with tau A. What's it doing? Over here I've got A, over there I've got B. For A, pick a point on A, shoot up, find the top, hit it with the address function that takes the code, that is the top code, that top function sends it over to a point on the attractor C, right? Take the color of a picture above there and paint the pixel that color over here. Color stealing. Now what's the point? Well, the point was, I mean, as the leaves on the top indicate, right? I want to take a real looking object modeled by, you know, the attractor of an IFS. The leaf is a famous one, so I used it. And I want to color it somehow real. And here's where the philosophy comes in. If I just go to the palette in Photoshop and paint and stuff, I can make it look green. But will it look real? There's something intrinsically, to my eye, different about a real natural picture and a bunch of paint thrown on the screen or on a canvas even, right? It's a natural palette. Neighboring points have natural transitions. There's a lot you can say about a natural picture, and it's philosophical, but I want to steal the colors from the natural picture to paint this object, and for some reason, hopefully, it will look more natural than if I just splash green on it. One of the applications that I'm thinking of, and at the end I'll hint at it a bit more, is a computer gaming world where you don't want to just repeat the same block of an image to paint the backgrounds of things. You want some diversity and some realness to it and so on. There's still something to come in that regard. But there are other things I'm thinking of as well. Okay, so here's the written description of what this sentence or equation one is saying. The scheme produces the stolen picture, P2, lying above the attractor A by stealing colors from the portion of picture P1 lying above B. That was me jumping back and forth at the front, right? Good. Okay. So, easy theorem. Suppose W is V. I'm at a point here. I take the top. I hit it with phi B. Where does it go? Same darn point, right? Because it's the same IFS. Shoot up, take the color, put it over here. What's the color? It's the color above the same attractor. I'm going to get, when I build my P2, I'm going to get exactly the portion of P1 that was supported by the attractor, right? Seems obvious. But to actually do it and see it happen, pretty cool. Okay, implementation. So, to code this thing, I'm going to play a dual chaos game. I've got one IFS, I've got another IFS. I start with a point. I grab out a map, or I actually grab a map number, right? Apply the appropriate map number, and play two chaos games at the same time. Over here, a point dancing around on the attractor. Here's my dynamical systems, right? Dancing around on the attractor. Over here, another point is dancing around on that attractor. If at any time I hit a point here where I've got a new biggest code, that's the current top, go over here, steal the color paint. Later on, I might have a new top, go over here, steal the color paint on top. Okay, so some practical issues. I changed the font for the picture to remind myself, because I need it, that I'm working with resolutions here and I got to be a little bit wary, right? A pixel in a picture. Okay, let me just read it rather than paraphrase it. P1 will be a picture that has some resolution, L1 by H1. P2 is a picture with some resolution, L2 by H2. In general, a pixel in each picture will correspond to a different size little box in the big box. Agreed? There's something in there, again, jumping to the end, there's something in there about how much color do you take to paint the new thing. If this one's bigger than that one, or if this one, right, okay, so something fun to play with. So, start by making all the pixels of the stolen picture white. At iteration K of the double chaos game, if you encounter a new maximum code, you're in some box. You're in a different box in the drawing IFS, in the coloring IFS, right? We always have at the ready the corresponding point because we're playing the game at the same time. We set the color, if we're at a new top point, of the corresponding pixel to the pixel we should steal from. It's important that, I mean, I could do this in many ways. I could just write a program that randomly picks a pixel and paints it, right, and get natural colors. This will converge to the same thing regardless of the chaos game that was played, right? The top is the top, period. So there's something pretty about that as well. So here's some examples. An illustration of Theorem 1. I'll make the two IFSs equal. It's the IFS with two maps that gives the twin dragon as its attractor. That's the Paisley thing, as all my students say, right? Here's the coloring picture that I'm going to steal colors from. Play the chaos game. I swear to you, I didn't like get a cookie cutter and my, yeah, we have a twin dragon cookie cutter at home. I didn't get a cookie cutter and cut it out. I played the chaos game and bingo. You get the right piece. So, theorem, which is a natural thing to propose, is true. So now you can have some fun. I can vary things. I could zoom in. I can do different things. What I've decided to show you is take the box above which you're stealing colors and move it around. Sorry, two water bottles. So what I did was the picture that I'm going to steal colors from, I just took four pictures that one had like nice greens and one had a field of flowers that had some reds and browns and the other had a picture of Antarctica, so there were lots of ice. And I sort of move the box around, and I'm going to go through the seasons. So it's a color-stealing version of time-lapse photography. You see lots of neat artifacts as it goes. Really, each frame is a separate colored leaf. And again, if you think of sort of a computer graphics or gaming implementation, there's lots of fun possibilities. Very quick to render if you have the top function handy already and not calculating it on the fly. Next. Okay. So the natural question, at least it seemed natural to me to ask, is suppose I give you the stolen picture. Can you put the pixels back? Can you put the colors back to where they came from, recover the image? So here I've introduced a new thing with a star on it. What portion of the coloring image can be recovered by reversing the color stealing process to produce P1 star from P2? And it's easy to come up with a theorem. All the stuff that the address map, all the elements of the top that the address map sends to B are recoverable. Even if two things go, everything works out. It's recoverable. So here's an experiment. Same picture that I had at the beginning. So I'm thinking of an encryption application here. I'm just keeping it a square. Same number of pixels then. And you can sort of see a horizontal line halfway. So anybody that's played with IFS sees a 0.5y and a 0.5y plus a half map floating around. There's four maps in here. These maps are not onto the address map for B is not sending the top function completely onto the attractor. So there's pieces that are lost. So it's an experiment, and this is what's recovered. So those are the colors that were actually stolen. The parts that are missing are the sort of the delta, right? The difference between the two. Which leads to things I've been thinking about in this area. So things to do. Explore the relationship, not really between the code spaces, but between the top functions and the address maps of different IFS pairs. Can you come up with sort of more robust encryption schemes or information hiding schemes? Oh, yes. So here's the gaming thing again. You see I have the three leaves in the corner. They're all exactly the same set attractor, colored differently. If you imagine making pictures for the background of a game with those, they look too uniform. You want them to be varied a bit. And so there are ways to do that, obviously, by just varying the parameters of the IFS map so things change a bit, but then you might lose the leaf. Or building what are called superfractals, where each element of the superfractal is some sort of epsilon ball shift of that picture. So around every pixel, draw a little ball, and sort of points may come in or go out, right? So you could have a bunch of leaves that look like they're from the same family and colored differently. And it's quite rich. And finally, where this goes is to a new topic. You probably never heard the word before. Only one paper that I know of from last year. Orbital pictures. Loosely put, very loosely, dynamics on picture segments to create new pictures. A lot of the ideas I've talked about surface there. You use top functions, you use other things. It's a neat new way of representing images and pictures that I didn't think I had time to get into, and I was right looking at the clock earlier. And my hope is that I can process them, compress and so on, and do the things you'd want to do. References, Barnsley, Michael Barnsley from last year in France at a conference. We chatted about this a lot. He has a new book coming out in August, and I had the good fortune of being one of his advanced readers and sort of commenting and so on over the sabbatical. A lot of fun stuff in there. And I submitted a paper with a couple of students on the topic as well. And that's it. Thank you.